for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get her own rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three.
Got it.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
And we are live from the campus of Illinois State University. This is the Red Zone. Good afternoon, everybody. Or good evening, I should say. Thank you so much for joining us on this BEA beautiful Thursday night. Anthony Ferretti, Leo Stauderher, Mitch Guad's with you. Joey Dwyer, you're not here tonight. Not feeling too well, feeling under the weather, but the show must go on. But fellas, we're finally back in the studio. How does it feel?
Feels good. I love it being here.
Feels pretty great. I mean, it's good to get outside my apartment for a while because, honestly, I was looking back at my step counter on my phone, like, from this past weekend where I was just watching football all weekend in the apartment, and they were pretty bad. I was under 1,000 on Saturday, so it's good to leave the apartment, get here, and talk some sports with you guys.
Alrighty, a lot going on. There's a lot of birthdays going on today. Patrick Mahomes, Alex Ovechkin, Austin Matthews, a lot of great players. And then add to the list of greats, our very own Joey Dwyer.
Indeed.
He's celebrating a birthday today, so very happy birthday to him.
Happy birthday, Joe.
Happy 22nd, Joey. Wish you were here.
Alrighty, we got a great show planned for you guys tonight. We're going to talk about the NBA playoffs, the MLB, the NFL, and then the pick six. We'll get right into it with the NBA playoffs as it is down to the final four teams. We take a look in the Western Conference Finals. It is the Denver Nuggets against the Los Angeles Lakers. But the biggest thing in the Eastern Conference Finals, it is the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics. But first of all, Denver, they upset the Clippers in Game 7 to get themselves to the final.
It's pretty surprising when you look at what the Nuggets were able to do, going 3-1 against the Jazz and then coming again 3-1 here against the Clippers, taking the Clippers' first Western Conference final appearance away from them. Two 3-1 deficits being taken down in one postseason is pretty remarkable when you think about it.
Definitely. Denver has just been probably the peskiest team in the NBA bubble. They've just been going up head-to-head with some of the top teams in the West, and I think the difference in this game, while it was definitely Jamal Murray's 40 points, it was kind of the star players for the Clippers did not really show up. Kawhi Leonard only had 14 points, and Paul George had 10 points. When you go out and you give up, there are grade schoolers that are going to be getting drafted with the first-round picks that the Los Angeles Clippers gave up to send to the Oklahoma City Thunder for Paul George. So when you're putting that much investment into a player and they kind of fade away in the most important moment, that's very tough. I think there was a lot of weight on those two players, and they just did not produce in the biggest game. That's probably one of the biggest takeaways I have from the Clippers, that while Denver deserved to win, also the Clippers definitely did not play up to the moment.
It's funny that you say that about what the Clippers gave up to the Thunder for Paul George, because I saw a post today about, it was during Colin Cowherd's show, and it was about how many first-round picks that the Thunder have until about 2026. It's like almost like 12. They have at least two a year, two first-round picks a year all the way up until like 2027 almost. It's ridiculous the amount of capital that they have coming into that system.
Yeah, and it was definitely hard for them to get rid of Russell Westbrook and then Paul George, but you almost look at that and think they could build something very special with that for the next decade to come, really.
Definitely.
Yeah, they could try and build something with it. But, yeah, the Clippers, it was not everyone expected them to go down the way they did, especially as you guys mentioned with the guys they have like PG-13 and then Kawhi Leonard as well coming over from the Toronto Raptors. So it kind of was shocking the way they went down. But the Nuggets, man, but Nikola Jokic, he's been stepping up. Jamal Murray as well, a big player for him, a big factor, really helped him basically get into that round to play against the Clippers.
He's come out of nowhere, really. And he's looked like one of the best players to come out of this the bubble since we've... It started out with T.J. Warren going off for the Pacers, but once they were canceled out, Damian Lillard had his time for a little bit, and then Jamal Murray pretty much stole the show. The battle that they had against the Jazz, him and Donovan Mitchell putting up 50- and 40-point games battling each other. The bubble has been very fun to watch. Extremely entertaining basketball.
Definitely has been very entertaining, and I think this could even add to the element of entertaining that it has been, where I think everybody's just been assuming that we were just going to get that Clippers-Lakers matchup in the conference final. And now this league, that's not going to happen, where the Denver Nuggets just absolutely surprise everybody. And who knows, maybe they can be that team that can hang in with or with the Lakers and really shock the rest of the league by coming out of the West for the finals, which it's going to be tough to do. But I mean, if any team can do it, I really think Denver could. They've just shown that they can hang in with any series no matter the deficit.
I thought that about the Blazers, but
oh yeah, they
didn't.
Yeah. No, the
big game tonight though, Miami.
Oof. Yeah, Miami against Boston. Game two tipped off basically 7 minutes ago between Miami and Boston. That was a huge game one, especially for the Miami Heat. They took game one over Boston and went into overtime. Jimmy Butler hits a go-ahead three-pointer in OT with 12 seconds remaining, and then bing, bang, boom, it is Bam Adebayo blocking Jason Tatum with just a few ticks to go in overtime.
Unreal.
Yeah, to give him the win.
That block was scary. I mean, Jason Tatum has a family to think of back home, and he just absolutely got destroyed on that block. That
crazy.
Was crazy. And this is going to be another interesting matchup, because I feel like when we were looking at the top teams in the East, well, maybe I think definitely the Celtics on paper match up pretty good, but after losing Kyrie Irving, I don't think their expectations were as high as they had been in previous years. But then they kind of just do what the Celtics do, where they just constantly make it to the conference final. I think they've made it, what, 12 times or 12 times since 1980 or something ridiculous like that. They are just a very consistent franchise, and they are just keeping up with that trend where maybe the star player isn't there anymore, but they just have a very good supporting cast where they can just win these long series.
I'm looking at a picture right now about it's a video about Adebayo talking about his block against Jason Tatum, and he said that two fingers on his left hand went numb after he blocked
man.
It. You could see the photo right here, how far back his hand bends. His hand is in the hoop. Jason Tatum practically dunked the ball, and Bam Adebayo pretty much took it out of the hoop and blocked it. And it was with like 0.4 or something like that. It was like it was the last shot of the game.
Yeah, a few seconds left. He blocked and basically just gave him the victory. But yeah, just seeing that photo, I was like, man, that's gotta hurt. Just his hands going back like that, because the way the shot goes, like even if he was trying to block a three, I mean, it could break some of your fingers. So, I mean, no surprise that some of his fingers were numb after that. I mean, you got to do what you got to do to try and win for your team.
Yeah, Tatum's coming in with just unreal amounts of force. He's coming off a screen, driving the hole. I mean, it was just an unbelievable block. It was crazy real time, and it was even crazier when you look back and like see what what it actually looks like. It's just wild.
Now, would you guys say that's been the play of the bubble so far?
Under the circumstances, I'd probably say so. I mean, game one of the Eastern Conference Finals, the Heat haven't been there since LeBron left. It's a big game for them. Jimmy Butler's trying to make a name. I mean, he's made a name for himself, obviously, already, but he's trying to say, like, hey, I'm here, I'm in the Eastern Conference, and I'm in the Eastern Conference Finals, and I'm ready to go. And he's got boys helping him out. Tyler Hero, Bam Adebayo, I mean, they got a great team.
Absolutely, and you talked about it a little bit, how this has been the redemption tour of Jimmy Butler. I think he's been restoring his reputation league-wide, because it seemed like he was getting that reputation as a bit of a diva or a locker room problem, and then now he's just been backing it up with his play and his winning mentality. Where what did he have? The hotel security was called up to his room because he was making too much noise, where he was actually dribbling a ball in his room like late at night. So he's just been, I think, reasserting himself as why there was so much hype coming out of him with the Bulls, and why he was such a sought-after player for many teams. So it's been great to see him get that redemption.
He's got a coffee shop now, too. In the bubble.
He's, I was going to say, yeah, he's...
what's it called? Top Coffee or something? Something? House Coffee? I don't even know. It's something. He's
yeah, he's selling coffee, he's an entrepreneur. In the bubble.
He's yeah. making the most out
supply
of being stuck
in there. Supply
and demand. Yeah. Yeah. Remember the early reports when there was all the bad pictures of like the food that they were getting and everyone was talking about just how terrible it was? I mean, these dudes are living on an Orlando resort. They got everything that they need in there. I would enjoy it.
Yeah, it's
just
not like
hooping.
It's not like they're eating Wadi cafeteria food either. It's probably much better food than yeah, any of us are getting right now. So I don't think they had it too bad.
Yeah, especially I think they're playing in Disney World, like in that kind of area. So it's like, yeah, you're getting a lot of time, kind of getting a bit of a vacation. You know, you're playing in somewhat decent weather down there in Florida. I mean, maybe, who knows, pull some strings and, you know, ride some roller coasters, you know.
I saw some videos of JaVale McGee and people on the Lakers going on the water slides and stuff. So they're having fun, man. Yeah, it's bad. They're in the NBA. They're fine.
That's got to be the best way to clear your mind after a bad game is just go ride Space Mountain and...
You won't be thinking about basketball much when you're on Space Mountain. Not at all.
Honestly, trying to get some splashes both both on and off the court. Well, we take a look, I guess shifting, I mean, well, it's the East final side. That's really where it's going to come down to because we've seen in the past it's just been the West, right, in the past few years with the Golden State Warriors, like, okay, they're going to win that. We're going to see how big they're going to dominate. Then we got L.A. and Denver. But now Boston and Miami, it's going to make for a compelling series.
Both of those teams can win the NBA Finals against either of the teams in the West, in my opinion. I think the Heat have a better chance, but I think that the Celtics are, I wouldn't say underrated because they're in the Eastern Conference Finals and people know all about them, but I think that they're legit. Both these teams in the East are legit. It's going to take everything and more to beat LeBron because, I mean, it's the NBA. Everybody loves the NBA wants LeBron to win. He's on the Lakers. I mean, like, it's set up picture perfect for the Lakers to win it, so I'm just looking for someone to come in there and steal it.
And the thing I was thinking about is the conditioning of the games they're playing, where the Heat and Celtics have both played multiple seven-game series. They've been playing some intense dogfights pretty much in these games. Where the Lakers, they've won their past two series in five games. They haven't really felt any pressure. They haven't felt like they've been cornered by a team yet. So if you get these teams, either Miami or Boston, that makes it to the final where there's every game has mattered, where they haven't been able to take their foot off the gas at all and face the Lakers, who might be coasting into the final a little bit, that could maybe be a recipe for disaster for LeBron and the Lakers.
I hope so, man.
Yeah, we'll have to see. It should be an entertaining finish to see who's going to capture the Larry O'Brien Trophy. Obviously, the Lakers are the favorite given they have LeBron James and Anthony Davis. But, yeah, it could be anyone the way Denver, Miami, and Boston have been playing. We'll see what happens in the next few games that are to come. But that'll just about wrap it up for our NBA coverage. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to shift to the diamond. You're listening to the Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
Hi, this is Paul DeYoung, former ISU Redbird, current St. Louis Cardinal. You're listening to Red Zone on WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND. You heard the ISU alum Paul DeYoung. Only fitting he brings us back into the show as we talk about Major League Baseball. Pretty exciting afternoon for the Chicago White Sox. So on the south side of Chicago, a victory for the White Sox would have given them a playoff berth. They were down 3-2 to Minnesota, but then back-to-back batters, I believe, was Jose Abreu and Eloy Jimenez were able to bring them back in the game. They won 4-3 and clinched their first playoff berth since 2008.
Yep, it's a great feeling. For people who have endured White Sox baseball for as long as I have, and I know that Leo has, it's not been fun. There have been many seasons where I wasn't looking forward to the beginning of the year because I knew that we had Yolmer Sanchez starting at third base. He's still on the team, and I'm still upset about that, but he's not the starter anymore. He isn't the guy that you're going out there hoping for a big game hit. You're hoping Jose Abreu and Eloy Jimenez to get the hits, and they're doing that. Jose Abreu deserves an MVP. The Sox are the best team in the AL. Leo, we're dancing, baby. It feels good.
Yes, sir. I played Don't Stop Believin' before the show for this occasion, and it doesn't feel real yet.
No, it doesn't.
That the last time the Sox made the playoffs was 2008. I was 8 years old. Ken Griffey Jr. was on the team. Jim Thome was on the team. Those guys are both long in the Hall of Fame now. It just feels wild that it's been this long since Sox fans have had pretty much any reason to be optimistic about their team. And they've been doing it the right way, where they were able to grow some prospects. They didn't go do what the White Sox normally do, or spend a bunch on old, overpriced veterans in free agency and trade for some guys past their prime. They built this team from within, a long rebuild, but it looks like the rebuild was well worth it, because now the young guys are up and they're playing well. And how fitting was it that Jose Abreu was the one that tied this game up? When he's been here, he's the longest tenured player on the team, and he endured all the rebuild and has been so consistent every year. And now when this team is finally ready to contend, he is here and he is playing at an MVP caliber.
That might be my favorite part about it all. The fact that Jose Abreu has been here since 2013, 2014, and he has been the guy since he stepped in Chicago. They knew right away. Paul Konerko was on a couple of his, I think it was either 1 year or 2 years. And once Paulie was gone, it was Jose Abreu's time. He's been around here. He knows what it means to get there every day, try your absolute best, put 100% into it, and finally he's starting to see results. He's got players around him for the first time ever in his career, ever. He's been here for 8 years, and it just, he's the workhorse of the team. He's the absolute 100% leader of that team. They rally behind him, and he produces for them, and it's beautiful, man. It's just, oh, my goodness.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the thing about Abreu, too, is now that he's taken on that leadership role, too, where he's from Cuba, and he's really taken Luis Robert under his wing, another Cuban free agent who doesn't speak the language yet. And so Abreu's been almost like a father figure for him in that clubhouse. And we heard he had done that with Moncada and Jimenez, too, where now he's the veteran on this team. He's been there. He knows how to put up solid major league seasons. He knows how to be an all-star. So he's here for these younger guys to try to better themselves and maybe help them when they're going through a slump or some things that he's experienced before.
Yes. Go ahead.
It's nice that you mentioned, and you know, to have guys like Jose Abreu on the team, some of those veterans who have seen this team through its ups and downs. As you mentioned, Mitch, since he's been here, since 13 or 14, so seeing how they can grow and adapt as a team, both offensively and defensively. And you mentioned Leo Luis Robert. That guy has just been lighting up, has had a phenomenal rookie season, I think a compelling case for rookie of the year, the way he's been going. Like, he's a first-year player, but the way he's been playing, it looks like he's been in the league for, like, 10 years.
He was insanely fun to watch as soon as he came up. He has slowed down in recent games. This recent stretch, he is in a little bit of a slump, so I'm not sure. There's not that much. There's only a couple weeks left in the season. I'm not sure if he will get the rookie of the year. I think that this past little slump that he has, that will be the deciding factor, the reason he won't get it. But I think he deserves it, because Kyle Lewis on the Mariners is a very good player. But Luis Robert is going to be the face of baseball very soon, in my opinion. It's going to be ridiculous. How at the beginning of the year, Leo, I'll ask you this. Did you think at this point in September we'd have the White Sox already clinching a postseason? They are the best team in the American League, and they have two MVP candidates and possible Rookie of the Year candidate.
Always fear the worst with this team. So I was thinking optimistically that, okay, maybe they'll be a wild card team, like the Twins, that it's going to be tough with the Twins and the Indians in the division. But they've just hung in there. I'd say the turning point was probably when Dallas Keuchel called out the team and said that the younger players need to take more veteran at-bats and they need to take a little more serious approach. And ever since then, this team has just been grinding. They have just looked they've looked like a playoff team is what they're doing, where they're not taking days off. They're not having lazy at-bats at the plate. They're hustling along the base paths. And it really, I think, does have to do with some of these de facto veterans on the team, like Abreu and Anderson. Like, you could really make the case that either of those players could win the MVP this year. And Tim Anderson has the best batting average in the American League. He's just been the team goes as Anderson goes. When he's playing hot, this team is doing well, and he's been just streaking all year.
And the Cubs helped us out, too. That, taking some from the Indians this week as well, putting them farther and farther down.
That they did. It's always nice when your crosstown rivals can help you out by beating a divisional foe.
I'm surprised they did help us after we walked in there and thumped them last time. I'd feel like, nah, they're about to make the postseason either way. Maybe, yeah, they could say, maybe screw the White Sox. We're going to lose these couple to the Indians, but nah, they took both the two that Cleveland was in town. So shout out to the Cubs for that. They're doing pretty well. They're like the fifth best team in the majors. They're 30-20. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's nice to see a change of pace in Chicago that we got two teams succeeding after these past couple of years where we've seen the Hawks kind of on a downfall, Bulls on a downfall, the Bears playing like garbage. So it's nice to see both of them. It's exciting, as you mentioned, the Cubs making a compelling case as well. They're 30-20 on the season. So,
and the thing about the Cubs that interests me the most is they're doing 30-20. I guess this is what scares me too about the Cubs. They're 30-20 right now, and their top players aren't even playing like their top players.
Nope.
Chris Bryant is batting .205. Kyle Schwarber is hitting .194. Javi Baez .211. They are just manufacturing runs, playing small ball, really. Not the flashy offense with lots of home runs that we've seen before. They are just getting these close wins with situational hitting and opportune scoring, where this may not be the Cubs team we're used to, but it's working because they're just winning at a ridiculous pace, where they're the only team in their division over .500 right now, and it's really scary to think what could happen if Baez, Bryant, and Rizzo could get on that hot pace that we're used to seeing from them, that this is what they're capable of doing without those three producing.
So that does help them, the fact that the NL Central is not very good. The Pirates are the worst team in the MLB. The Cincinnati Reds are not performing what they're supposed to. The Cardinals and the Brewers, I remember hearing stuff about them going into the year that they're going to have bounce-back years. But the Cardinals got COVID right away. That pretty much screwed up a lot of what they were planning. I feel like that underlining issue with COVID around the Cardinals really handcuffed them right away.
Definitely, because, I mean, they're still making games up now. I mean, the Cardinals have basically played like 3/4 of the games everybody else has played. So, and especially coming down the stretch, they're going to have to play a lot more doubleheaders. So I think that inadvertently helped the Cubs, where nobody else in the division has posed a threat to them, and they've just been able to capitalize on playing some of these weaker teams they've had to face.
Yeah, you mentioned it with the Cardinals trying to play as many games as they can. I remember when it was like halfway through the season, the Cardinals only played like 7 games compared to the rest of the league playing 18, 20 games potentially. And then now I read somewhere that they've got to play like 20 games in 23 days. So it's really going to be a test of their fatigue to see how they can battle through that, especially with what they've been going through, because that's a lot of games. I mean, we've seen 162 games in 180 days, but I mean, this, it's a condensed season. You're not getting as much time off to try and recover, so we'll see what happens with the Cardinals.
Yeah, the White Sox are on a 17-day, 17 games to finish out their year, so they're in a full sprint down the road, finishing it out. They might coast a little bit now that they made the postseason, but I think they want that. They want that division, so.
Yeah, I don't think this team's going to coast just the way the mentality they've had, where they've been just so aggressive every day. And, like, you watch them play, it just looks like they're having so much fun out there with just the antics that they got in the dugout and even on the field, like with some of the stuff with Jimenez and Robert, like, arguing, where Robert comes over and just steals a fly ball from Eloy. Like, this team just looks like they're having fun and they're playing so loose out there, which I think has had something to do with the success they've had.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Leo, I think we might have talked about this a little bit in the earlier shows, but Mitch, I want to ask you about it too. What is your opinion on this shortened season that they have? Like, do you think going forward a shortened season could benefit the league?
I've been saying for a while that I wanted the MLB to shorten their season. Not down to 60. I think taking 102 games out of the year is a little much. I'd say that they 102 game season is roughly what they should be doing. I think when I first heard about this, I did like that they added the DH in the NL. That was one of my favorite things that they did. But I don't really like the 7-inning doubleheaders. I get why they do it, because there's so many games and so little days. But 60 games, you have no room for error. I mean, just like I said about the Cardinals, they got off to a rough start because they didn't play many games, and that can be a deciding thing for you. There are But that doesn't always happen because the Sox started out, not many people know this, the Sox were 10-11. They are now 33-17.
That's crazy to think
about. Not many people know that. Yes, they were not good to start the year. So some teams, if they get hot, then they do. That's what they do. It's crazy to see what the Sox have done. 23-6 over their last 29. Wow.
It's just been a ridiculous turnaround, and it just has me feeling so good about this team. I haven't felt this good about the team in years, and so I'm just ready to get my hopes crushed in the postseason. I don't care. They could go all the way. They could lose early. I'm just so happy to have meaningful White Sox baseball back in my life.
Facts.
I think regardless of what happens, that Sox fans should be optimistic about what's to happen because we've seen with other Chicago teams like the Cubs, for example, they were in the playoffs. They got eliminated by the Dodgers. Then they were able to come back the following year and win the World Series. So maybe it's kind of building up for the White Sox where they get some of their new guys and even their veterans as well, get that playoff experience, get them into the swing of things, their management as well, trying to build some good chemistry. So try and do that for the next season or two, and then hopefully they can bring home that trophy and party like it's 2005.
Let's do it, man. I'm all in.
There's
it's like
nothing
I'm on the team. I feel like I'm on the team, like I'm in the dugout. It's like I'm there every day. It's wild.
Yeah, that's... They should start selling seats in the dugout, just like,
right.
And maybe do a little giveaway, have seats be in the dugout, see what's
social
going on.
Social distance, though. I'll be at the end. You guys just stay away from me. I don't want to get you sick.
Yeah, get some seeds and bubble gum thrown at you. That's Mitch, all you need.
Mitch could be like the hype man for the Sox. I think he brings a lot of energy to whichever room he's in, so I think they could use him in that dugout.
I'm like a different Nick Madrigal, except I just don't play. I'm just there.
He might be a little taller.
Yeah, we'll have to see as the MLB season's starting to wind down a little bit, but this brings us to our Red Zone question of the week in honor of the Chicago White Sox clinching a playoff berth with their 4-3 victory over the Minnesota Twins this afternoon. We're asking you, listeners, how do you think they will do in the playoffs? Will they fall in the ALDS, fall in the NLCS, win the World Series, or other? We're going to post that. We'd love to hear your input. We are going to take a break, and when we come back, it'll be an exciting finish for our show. You're listening to The Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you are listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to The Red Zone. Anthony Ferretti, Leo Stauder, Mitch Guadz joining you this evening for this week. Once again, we are back in the studio. Feels really good to be back after we've done some YouTube Red Zones past few weeks. But now we dive into the NFL. Their season kicked off last week with the first game between the Chiefs and the Texans. That was entertaining, but just as entertaining, the Jacksonville Jaguars and the debut from a running back I don't think anyone outside of Jacksonville or Bloomington Normal has heard of, James Robinson. What a debut he had for Jacksonville.
Great. Just awesome. The most rush yards ever by an undrafted rookie in week one. Your Redbird, James Robinson. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, and you said, Anthony, maybe nobody outside of Bloomington Normal has heard of him. I'd say there are many fan bases across the Missouri Valley Conference that know what James Robinson is capable of, maybe even in central Arkansas and southern Missouri, where James Robinson has just been terrorizing those teams for years. And I think, you know, that we've all seen what he's capable of for years, and it was a little sad to see that he didn't get drafted because there was a lot of hype. He had an impressive combine, but then just to see him earn his spot right out of training camp, it kind of shows just how good he is and what great value the Jaguars are getting out of him.
And we've seen with the Jaguars, they got rid of Leonard Fournette, and it was cool to see, just looking at an article, that part of the reason they got rid of Leonard Fournette was how well James Robinson did in training camp. It's just crazy to think about that now James Robinson is a starting running back. Like, I think if you asked a Redbird fan at the beginning of his senior season and say by the time, you know, he gets to his rookie year, he's going to be a starting running back, they probably would have said, you're crazy. He's a good running back, not top tier.
Yeah, I definitely would not have said that he would have been starting for an NFL team last year when I was watching him. No disrespect to James Robinson at all. That just shows you the elite level of talent, especially at the running back position in the NFL, because James Robinson can come in there, an undrafted rookie, and put up 62 yards and a 28-yard reception. It's just great to see. We don't really get an insane amount of ISU alums in sports, especially starters. So seeing him come out and earn that starting job right away was just awesome.
And it's been fun to see just like how many of his former teammates have been tweeting out their well wishes for him and have been reacting to his highlights. It just feels like this is just a huge win for the ISU community, a great moment, just because, you know, football season did end kind of on a sad note last year with the loss to North Dakota State, and we don't have football right now. So this feels like just kind of the ISU community is coming together and cheering for the Jaguars, which is it's pretty much the closest thing to live Redbird sports we've had this semester.
It's sad that we don't have that, but this is, I guess, what we'll have to do for now. We'll be watching old Redbirds until the new ones can come back.
Yeah, that's another discussion we want to have about Redbird football not playing this season, obviously for safety concerns, but James Robinson really been stepping up, as you mentioned. Other Redbird alums have been talking about, even in the league, we've seen Devontae Harris, Luther Kirk, they're tweeting out, they're like, let's get it. Even other teammates of James Robinson that aren't playing professionally are excited to see him, because as you mentioned, Mitch, we don't get many people here that are notable to play. You know, we've had Doug Collins in basketball, Paul DeJong, but, you know, we haven't had, especially in football, that big guy, you know, that Tom Brady kind of person, yeah, where they've kind of changed the league. But it's amazing to see how far he's come. You mentioned with the reception he had. I mean, he hurdled the defender for his only reception, which is insane. Then we saw in the East-West Bowl that he was in, he had the longest rushing touchdown, beat out some of the defenders from Alabama.
And yeah, that's why I thought he was why he was almost a lock to get drafted, was because in all the pre-draft showcases, he was dominating. That you saw lots of draft analysts were saying he was sliding up on their big boards. I think it might have just had something to do with teams. There weren't as many running backs picked at the start of the draft, so he might have slid a little bit. And I think teams might have got a little sneaky and thought we could get him as an undrafted free agent rather than using one of our valuable draft picks on him. And that might lead to him playing with a chip on his shoulder where he thinks, okay, yeah, nobody thought I was good enough to get drafted. Now I'm starting. Now let's just go dominate this league. And I think that could definitely be some extra motivation for him.
If you're a team like the Jaguars, especially a team that doesn't have extremely high expectations coming into this year, and you find a diamond in the rough, James Robinson, that you pick up off the undrafted waiver wire after releasing Leonard Fournette. I don't really know that they're too upset about doing that because they did it on their own volition, like he would have played. But after releasing your top running back, who you drafted high in the draft a few years ago, and picking up James Robinson and him just immediately taking over the role, how good does that have to feel if you're the Jaguars that you found this guy? I mean, just a world saver for these people.
Well, that's how you get good in the NFL, is by finding talent from unexpected places. You not only have to hit on your first and second round picks, but you have to hit on your late round picks, find good undrafted free agents. So I think that says a lot about the scouting department of the Jacksonville Jaguars, that they were able to find some value here. And you talked about drafting Leonard Fournette high. How bad must it feel to have drafted Leonard Fournette while Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson were still on the board? I couldn't imagine getting that pick so badly wrong.
I didn't know that was the same draft, actually.
Yes, fourth overall pick in 2017. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, fourth overall, 2017. Yeah, those are some good players picked after him.
Running back right now, too.
Yeah, it looked like if we could have done a redraft, that's how it should have been.
No, if it was a redraft, yeah, they were going with Mahomes. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's crazy. I look back, that draft, Bears fans will never live that one down.
I know, especially with everything. But shifting gears a little bit with the Jacksonville Jaguars, we've seen a lot of the rookies, in addition to James Robinson, step up. Laviska Shenault Jr. had a big game, Colin Johnson as well. Forget if he played or not, but this they're going to have another divisional test this weekend against the Tennessee Titans. We saw they put up a grudge match against the Denver Broncos, who also had some ISU alums. So this, I think, is going to be a real test for James Robinson to see how he can do in the NFL, like a temperature check on a good defensive team.
Well, I hope he can do pretty well because I just added him to my fantasy team. So for selfish reasons, I'm hoping he could prove himself. But also, I think it should be an interest. And, you know, the Colts aren't a joke either. They've been, a lot of analysts have had them as a sleeper pick in this league now because they've made some nice improvements to their defense. So I think he did have a strong performance against an already good team, but now he has to face a much better team this week.
Luckily for me, I had the Colts defense. I had the luxury of having the Colts defense last week. And James Robinson was just running laps around them, so that was fun. They didn't get me anything, and I dropped them the next week, picked up Seahawks instead, but terrible.
You really hate to see that.
Yeah, you do.
I know. Looking at the fantasy outlook of it, in the league that I'm in, former sports director Steve Rizzala, he was so confident in James Robinson's ability to perform that he drafted him late. He didn't pick him up on the waiver wire like some people are doing this week or maybe before the game last week. He drafted him, which was pretty bold.
That is pretty bold, and I had thought about it. Originally, one of the buddies in my draft said we should only be allowed to pick players from our university. Now, that's easy for him to say as he goes to Ohio State. I think that he was doing that so he could pick Zeke. But now, maybe picking Robinson wouldn't have been that bad of an idea in the draft.
I didn't have him go in any of my drafts. He was not drafted, but he was picked up pretty quickly as soon as the draft ended, that I noticed, because I noticed that as soon as my draft was over, I looked and I needed running backs, and I picked up Leonard Fournette, and that's what made me think of it. I looked at Leonard Fournette, and I was like, wow, I think James Robinson might be the starting back for the Jaguars. So I went to look for him. He got picked up pretty quick, so obviously other people in my league were thinking the same thing, and they're getting the benefits from it, and my running backs will continue to be bad.
James Robinson's certainly making a name for himself league-wide with all that. Definitely very fun to see for fans of Redbird Sports.
I mean, he has a historic debut. I mean, until someone breaks 62 yards, he will be the record holder for most undrafted or most yards in the first game for an undrafted rookie. So we'll see next year if someone else can beat him. I don't know. I don't think that'll happen. I mean, 62 yards is also kind of not that much. I thought it would be more. But an undrafted rookie, when you really think about it, it's a pretty good day at the office for James.
It's doable. You got to think, too, of how talented the running back is and also the kind of offense they're playing with in addition to the defense they're playing against. True. So if you were playing like the Seattle Seahawks defense, you know, from, what was it, 2013?
2014, the Legion of Boom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be a true test as well. But if they were, you know, playing against a defense, you know, that had a lot of gaps, you know, more gaps than Strahan's teeth, then, you know, you could kind of see it.
It was impressive overall. Like, it's just so great. Like, for people who care about ISU sports, and I'm sure, obviously, there's a ton of you listening who are, it's, you know the feeling, I know the feeling, we all know the feeling. It's just so good to see someone from Bloomington Normal out there just making it in the real world. It's just great, dude. Seriously, that's all I can say about it. It's just cool. It's awesome.
Absolutely, and I think it speaks to the culture of what Coach Spack has been building here at Redbird Football, where just in the last decade, they've actually been a very consistent team in the FCS, and hopefully this could be the start of more Redbirds making the NHL or NFL, where some coaches and GMs see, okay, this Robinson kid, he's pretty good. Where did he come from? And then see some of the other players he played with and maybe take some flyers on them.
I mean, we've seen it a little bit. A lot of people might not think of Illinois State as a top-caliber program being in the mid-major school, but we look at the Missouri Valley Conference. Their motto is the Valley runs deep, and that is not just saying it literally that the Valley runs deep. It's saying it metaphorically as well, because there's a lot of depth in this conference. You look across all sports. I mean, you see recently with the Missouri Valley Football Conference, with North Dakota State, Carson Wentz being drafted second overall. People were thinking, oh, did he go to a top-caliber program like Wisconsin? No. North Dakota State playing in FCS football. So I think scouts should really take a look, because there's still a good amount of talent in FCS football as there is in FBS football.
Definitely. And I think that's why, or what NFL, what makes or breaks NFL scouting is where can you find talent? Because obviously everybody knows that there are good players on Alabama, on Clemson, and LSU. But those players, those top players, are normally off the board after the first round. So you got to go all, to all ends of the country to find talent. And we've certainly seen a lot from the Valley, just like Chris Johnson from Northern Iowa. Even Trey Lance, the current quarterback for North Dakota State, he's expected to be a first-round pick this year.
Yeah, I believe it's David Johnson you're talking about from UNM.
Right, right.
Playing, he was on the Cardinals, then moving to the Texans. But you mentioned it with a quarterback like Trey Lance, where last year, 42 touchdowns, no interceptions, which is virtually unheard of. And I remember watching a video after the draft, and Max Kellerman was talking to Mel Kiper about who's a quarterback to look out for that people don't know the name of now, but should before draft time. And he goes, well, it's going to be Trey Lance. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal quarterback. I'm thinking, well, Valley people already know Trey Lance.
Yep. Unfortunately, we know him too well.
Yeah, that's a story for another time. But that will just about wrap it up for our NFL segment. James Robinson had a historic debut, as we mentioned, against the Indianapolis Colts. 16 rushes, 62 yards, one reception for 28 yards. We'll see how he's going to do this weekend against the Tennessee Titans when we come back. It is the best segment in sports talk radio. Want to find out what that is? Got to stick with us. You're listening to The Red Zone on the Pulse Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND. The best stinger, I think, in sports talk radio. You know what time it is. It is time for the pick six. So for those that might be unaware how this works, what we do is we pick six NFL games that are going to happen between the Thursday night game tonight and the one next week. We take six games. We predict them. We basically just predict who the winner is going to be, and then we find out how we're going to do. We take a look at the standings after week one. At the top of the leaderboard, it is Leo Stauder, a perfect 6-0 the first week.
Yeah, well, I think that's just karma at work, because when I was a guest last semester for 3 Up, 3 Down on the Red Zone, I went 0-6. So I took a good amount of flack for that, so I think this is just the universe's way of rewarding me for all that I had to deal with last semester.
Then moving down the standings, we got Joey in second. He's 5-1. Then faculty advisor Steve Cease in third. He's 4-2. I'm in fourth at 3-3. And no surprise, given how the pick six has been going in years past, the guest at the bottom with a phenomenal 2-4 record.
I'm changing that today. I promise you that right now.
Changing
that. I like that.
That's what we like to hear, the amount of confidence. Try and bring it up positively for the guests. It's only up from here. But without further ado, let's get going. We got our first game. It's the Thursday night football game, which is going to kick off shortly after the end of this show. It is the Cincinnati Bengals against the Cleveland Browns. It's going to be a interesting matchup for the Battle of Ohio. But I think number one overall pick, Joe Burrow, gets his first win. I'm going Cincy.
I'm agreeing with you there, 100%. Going with the Bengals. I don't think the Browns are really up to what they've been talking about for the past couple years about how they have a new team, Odell and all that. Nah, it's Bengals for sure.
Yeah, I'm also going with Cincinnati here. I think Joe Burrow really impressed me last week, doing everything to put his team in a position to win. Unfortunately, their kicker let them down, which I can't imagine how that feels, a kicker putting your team in a terrible spot.
You sure?
Maybe a little bit. And then Baker,
speaking from experience.
And just Baker Mayfield hasn't impressed me at all this year. And it's a shame because I want him to be good. He was one of my favorite college football players in recent memory. But he's just been a bit of a disappointment the past couple seasons. So
agreed.
I'm not sold on him yet.
Gotcha. Joey Dwyer going with the Bengals as well.
Oh,
Steve Cease changing things up a little bit. He's on the Baker train.
Jeez.
Going with the Cleveland Browns.
Come on, Steve.
Bring it up to the second game. It's the New York Football Giants against the Bears. Being a Chicago fan, hopefully it can be an easier win for the Bears this week going Chicago.
It hurts me as a Cowboys fan to say this, but I am going with the New York Giants. I think the Bears' first win was definitely a fluke. DeAndre Swift catches that ball. The Bears lose that game. I don't think the Bears are all that this year, so I'm going with the Giants.
Yeah, that was just an ugly win last week. It felt more like the Lions lost that game more than the Bears won that game.
Agreed.
I have to go with the Bears here. I'm not totally sold on the Giants yet. I think they're going to be a very good team soon, but I just think the Bears, coming home off a bad game, I think their defense is going to be playing with a little bit of an extra edge, and that could hopefully propel them to a win.
Joey Dwyer, he's going with the Chicago Bears, and Joey texted me saying that Steve's crazy for picking the Cleveland Browns, but he might make up for it, Joey, because in this game, Steve's going with the Chicago Bears.
Wow. I'm the outlier here, then. Only Giants pick today.
He's going with the Bears, given he is a Lions fan, so that's interesting. We'll move it to the third game of the week, Jacksonville Jaguars against the Tennessee Titans. As much as I like James Robinson in this game, it's going to be tough for him. And the way Tennessee played last week really impressed me. I think with Ryan Tannehill and everyone, Tennessee is going to take this one.
I agree with you, Jacksonville. James Robinson, you had your nice little moments there, and I hope you prosper. I hope you prosper in the future, 100%. But Tennessee is going to take this one, I believe.
Yeah, I don't think there's much of a question here. I think Jacksonville is a team that's kind of trying to lose by design. They're tanking for Trevor, and Tennessee has championship aspirations, so I'm going to have to go with the Titans here.
Joey texted me. He's like, Steve got redemption on that one. Well, it looks like it's going to be a clean sweep because both Joey and Steve have the Tennessee Titans winning this one. So we're halfway through the pick six. Our fourth game, it is the Washington football team. Trying to get used to saying that against the Arizona Cardinals. Washington is a compelling team, but I think with Arizona, with Kyler Murray, DeAndre Hopkins, Arizona's going to pull this one out.
This one was tough for me because Washington surprised me a lot last week, beating the Eagles. Wasn't sure if it was the Eagles playing super bad or Washington playing pretty good. I think it was a little bit of both. But Arizona played outstanding last week, in my opinion. DeAndre Hopkins and Kyler Murray are going to be a problem. I'm going with the Cardinals.
Oh, man. Oh, man. I'm talking myself into something right here.
Oh, boy.
I had the Cardinals originally, but now playing the game, playing the odds, everybody going with the Cardinals. I think I'm going to go with the football team here, just for the reverse psychology here, where if they lose, I'll be the only one that has it. And I do think Ron Rivera is one of the better coaches in the NFL. He can get more out of less, and I think that's been evident so far with the football team. So let's go Washington.
And we've seen the way he's been able to coach. I mean, big round of applause to him having a planned IV during halftime so that he can coach the second half. Joey Dwyer and Steve are both going with Arizona as well, so a big trend that a lot of people are being similar. Then we move to the Sunday night football game. It is the New England Patriots against Russell Wilson's Seattle Seahawks. This is a tough game for me to pick because New England is talented with Cam Newton. And then we see Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. He's a top caliber quarterback always. We see the guys like Tyler Lockett that they have, Chris Carson, DK Metcalf. I'm going Seattle in a close one.
I have Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf both on my fantasy team, so this one is going to be hard. I'm going to have to go with the Patriots. I think Cam Newton surprised me a lot last week, and I think the Patriots are still a good team. Belichick's still the coach, man. You never know.
I think this is a tough one. I think it's going to come down to the defenses here because it's very hard to go into the Gillette Stadium and get a win, especially early in the year. But now without fans, that might be a little different. I still think there were some problems with the Patriots last year where they almost coughed up a game to the Miami Dolphins. So I'm not totally sold on them. I think the Seahawks let Russ Wilson cook last week. He threw for 322 yards and 4 touchdowns. So I'm going to go with Pete Carroll and the Seahawks here.
I believe the Seahawks are going to be at home on this one. They're going to play at CenturyLink Field.
Well, then even more reason to pick the Seahawks, I guess.
So Leo's going with Seattle. Joey's going with Seattle. Steve, going with Seattle.
Oh, I'm by myself this one. Come on now. That's two.
It's interesting. We're all trying to play to win, but we're all picking the same team, so it's either we're all going to do well or we're all going to
I got two
plummet.
Different ones. I got the Giants and Seattle or New England. I'm all by myself.
Playing the strategy, Mitch. I
playing
like it.
Who knows? The guests will go 6-0 and impress all of us and me at the top of that.
Well, maybe not. Maybe not do that well, but
I think maybe
3-3 would be nice for Mitch.
Then we got our final football game. It is Monday Night Football. The New Orleans Saints against, get used to saying this, the Las Vegas Raiders. Las Vegas, a talented team. Derek Carr, Henry Ruggs III had a good debut, but just a talent that New Orleans has, especially behind veteran quarterback Drew Brees. I'm going Saints.
Yeah, it's hard to take anybody else but the Saints lately. Vegas is a good team. Josh Jacobs is going to be one of the best backs in the league pretty soon, in my opinion, if not already. But yeah, it's hard not to go with the Saints here.
I also have to go with the Saints here. They've just been one of the top teams in the NFC year in and year out. And if it's a young team like Las Vegas early in the year, I think the advantage goes here to Sean Payton and the New Orleans Saints.
Once again, another clean sweep as both Joey and Steve are going with the Saints as well. We'll see if they'll come marching in or marching out, see how the other teams will do. But that will just about do it for this week's edition of the Red Zone Podcast. We thank everyone so much for joining us here. Just to recap what we talked about, we first opened up the show with the NBA playoffs, talking about the Clippers and how they were shockingly eliminated, then the East and West Finals. Then we moved into the Diamond to talk Major League Baseball, which our news and sports guest Mitch Wads wanted to talk about, with the White Sox getting a big victory today over the Tennessee Titans. Or not Tennessee, my goodness.
Oh, boy.
A lot of sports going on. Wow. Minnesota Twins. Nonetheless, they're in the playoffs. Very exciting for them. Then we moved over to the gridiron. We talked James Robinson's historic NFL debut as a former Redbird. And then finally, it was the best segment in sports talk radio, the Pick Six. Leo's atop the leaderboard. We'll see what happens. If you missed any part of today's show,
hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again. Download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.